Hi, I'm Josh, and I believe over 100 people attended our film festival, but that might be a rounding error.
You just put the title of a movie in the thing. I'm Matt, and apparently I've forgotten how to do this in the last couple of weeks. And I was happy to spend the genre film exposition in a theater full of people that I would lovingly consider dangerous animals.
Oh, fine. I almost had a joke that was dangerous animals. I was gonna say something about granimals, and I was gonna like some of the graham crackers stuck in your eye, and like. I was close, and then Matt was like, "Ha ha, swoop!" So I was like, not being able to be there. I was a sad monster on a sad monster island, and then I got eaten by a park launcher.
Guillermo del Toro movie.
Jesus Christ. That's perfect.
And
how's Charlie? Remember, he's doing a del Toro.
Oh no.
she broke up with him, huh? Yeah.
Sad monster. But we believe at Horror Show Hot Dog that no monster is an island. And as I said, we're Horror Show Hot Dog. So first off, before we start talking about all the things that we watched, we should talk about some things that we watched. The Minnesota Genre Film Exposition, which we have been talking about extensively, did take place over the past weekend.
We did a thing.
It was lightly attended. I think that is fair to say.
Yeah.
But it was like everyone who attended enjoyed the shit out of it.
Yeah.
So if you look at it that way,
it is like most art, which is to say artistically rewarding, not particularly financially rewarding. Right. But,
we learned some things, and we learned that we need to learn some other things to do a like successful in every part of the thing. But it was fun. We had some great moments, like the entire family of one of the filmmakers who made a short called Beast of the North Woods attended. Mm. To watch their short on the big screen, and
that was great.
Absolutely wholesome. You know, like I had the director and star and her parents and her kids and like her, you know, a couple other random folks too. And it was quite fun because they came in for Beast of the North Woods, which was at the top of the bill. And that is just a fun little romp. It's like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie only shrunk into 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then when I saw that the kids were walking in the room, I went, what else is on this block? And I realized that the next film was Zoe, which is about a zombie lady who got her leg cut off and had to have her dog put to sleep. And that it ended with Pandora Inc., which has just a guy getting his dick sucked by a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just walked up and said, "We are so glad you're here. And I would not recommend that the children stay past your short. They should absolutely watch your short." And fortunately, that was the plan from the start. So
yeah,
it went over very well. And they got to hear us all laughing and cheering. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good you thought of that, because we don't want to put anybody in an uncomfortable situation ever.
Right, that's for sure.
You
know? No, certainly not children. Like adults, I can put in an uncomfortable situation. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like the backseat of a Volkswagen.
There you go.
No,
that was lovely. We had a few instances where someone involved with the one of the films was able to attend, and I've realized now it's maybe my favorite part of the weekend is watching a film with one of the people that was intimately involved with it, and seeing them have that little like laugh of recognition you do when you see a thing, and like you can tell it's like they're remembering what it was like on that day on the set. They're like, "Oh God, this is that scene Lori did," and it's so out of character that she was even in this thing, especially like during that one with like all the family that we talked about, Beast of the North Woods. Like someone would just be on screen, just simply being revealed by the camera, and it would get a laugh, and it's like, okay, this must be someone everybody knows. And it's like, there's John or whatever. And like little bits of that would happen throughout the weekend. And that was just cool because it once again, as much as Josh and I talked about this, and we talked about this with some of the guests too. Seeing these things on a big screen is, for all the stuff that we had only seen, you know, that we liked, obviously, from watching it on our laptops or TVs. And like, it's such a more intense artistic experience in a film, you know, watching it in a movie theater as a, like a feature film. And then you get this extra layer of going, yeah, and this is like literally still tied to these people so closely to their hearts because it's so fresh. And seeing it with them and having those moments still kind of occur to them as they're watching their own product was just an amazing little thing that really showed, showed the soft beating underbelly of the whole thing to me, which is always this part I'm most excited about. So, and yeah, also, absolutely loved that.
The super happy fun clown team, which they were lovely human beings.
They're great. Yeah.
They gave us a couple of factoids, like little pop-up video as we were going, because that was the late night screening. And so it was just me, Matt, and Jess and them. And they were gracious enough to not go, what the fuck is everybody? And just sit and watch the movie with us and love that we enjoyed it. So that was some good shit. Yeah. Seeing some of the shorts just even played better. And when you could have even the sound system.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure.
For example, in the Welcome to the Drumlins, which is one of them that should probably end up on a streamer pretty quick here, I feel like. Mm-hmm. There are little voices in the forest where the people are camping ill-advisedly. And I heard none of those voices on the like shitty MacBook speakers, but I heard them behind me in the theater.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And it's like, I think it really underscored to us that this is worth doing.
Yep.
Just to like bring joy to the filmmakers, bring joy to ourselves, like, bring joy to the fishes.
Hopefully increasing numbers of like-minded folks.
Yeah. Well, so the goal then is just to have like more people in the audience than on the screen at any given
time. I just think, you know, these things deserve to be seen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Just given the sheer diversity of things that were submitted, we had... but I'm not going to call anybody out because I don't want to tease anything else. But we had a few people submit things from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area that were absolutely not of our thing. But it was like they were so earnest and sweet about it that it was like you had that realm of things. You had things from like a whole bunch of different countries of all different parts of the world.
That surprised me. Yeah.
And then like, you know, just some really interesting kind of – it's like what we always say about like with just everything with those shorts with that kind of stuff. Like just seeing what the next thing is that somebody's going to do. Not because it has to be some thing where the theater shakes and you get, you know, perfume sprayed in your ear or some bullshit. Like it's like what somebody's going to do new, that's the way that you tell a creative thing. It's like what's the next thing that somebody can do with something. And like the one that the title is escaping me. The one where the lady lays down to go to sleep and she's listening to the forest sounds one.
Oh yeah, outside noise.
Outside noise is fucking amazing, and like the balls of the folks that made that one is just greatly impressive. Because what it reminded me of is like you watch that one, was it Ritual, the one that they had Netflix picked up a few years ago, had like Rafe's Ball and a couple other people in it, where it's the kind of pagan-y deal, and like the transitions from like reality to dream to things, and they're just melding and stuff, and just being real bold about their choices. Like, you know, I'm not going to put any words in the folks that made this short's mouth, but like watching what they were doing stylistically and framing and the way that they did stuff, like that exists in this like forward progression from where like Ritual exists and another thing exists. And like, it's people doing something different and interesting and just taking that next step of not a gimmick, not a fad, not a trend, but just sort of like, what's the next thing we can do with something? And that's like, and I really fucking love that. Same thing with animation, same thing with stop motion stuff. Like, and some of those things are just breathtakingly incredible. So it's like, that is the thing that gets so exciting, is to see what somebody else is doing with something. Or what Chris McElroy is going to make blow out of somebody's body.
That too.
That's always exciting too.
Yeah, I'm always lined up for whatever he is going to put his poor Bruce Campbellish actors through next.
I know, it's like what new awful gross squishy thing's gonna happen to somebody, like, oh Chris, you silly man.
And I'll tell you what, as much as like the legit scares and stuff were good, and like the really funny stuff that really landed was great. There's a couple of moments though where we sat in a room full of strangers and you could hear everyone crying. And that's always like, to me, that's always the undeniable, like, okay, these are affecting people. We've presented something that is connecting, you know?
Yeah.
But watching Until We Die, Bound in Rosemary, both of those very movement based and just kind of just intense, and just they sort of let the experience wash over you. And then the one that just destroyed everyone was Stay.
Yeah.
The one that deals with dementia. And you could, we had a lot of conversations after that block with people, and everybody had a story from their life.
Sure.
And, you know, it was just, it was a great moment of like this little mini catharsis with, again, room full of strangers. I love that. I think it's so cool.
Well, and I just love that feeling of like, there's no getting, and Josh, you said it very, very well. Like, you know, the thing about like just what it is to be in the, be in a room with that stuff. I mean, like, I will never forget being when we did, when we were working with Twin Cities for a bit there and with Curve, where it was like, like a very, very packed audience. There was a lot of people on that particular block. Like, I think, I don't remember exactly, but it was a fuck ton of people in there. Yeah. And like, that's the opener. And just hearing 150 assholes just pucker, like just like,
and then nothing just, but like, silence.
It just dead ass silence. You could hear a, you could hear an ant fart from like three blocks away. It was so quiet in there, and like that means something. That means something that the filmmaker did, that that actress in that short particular, like, it just means something legitimate. And it's like, and there's something, you can't put a topper on that. Like seeing, I was just in the second audience or third audience to see You're Next. And then like when the mask pops up at the stairs, the entire audience goes, oh fuck. And, like, it's just, it, like some people audibly, some people just get, but you just, everybody's there in that spot in that moment, and that feeling of that, there's something just unbelievable about that. And so it's like, so, but then all, and you know, not for nothing, but when there's a theater with five people in, there's a theater with 400 people in there, you know, like our friends at Texas Revolution Film Festival, James Christopher and that, their bunch, they, you know, they'll be the first to tell you, like, they'll have screenings that they have, you know, 200 people in, and they have ones that there's like three. And it's one of those things where ultimately it's like, you did put it up in front of somebody. It's the next step forward. It's the next step to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. You know, and I think about some of the early screenings that I went to with my buddies at Paper Street, with their silly one about the chupacabra in the backyard where they shot at their yard, and with the dog and the little prosthetic on the dog. And, you know, now it's sort of like they, you know, they've just had a very successful, very well received series on Sci-Fi with Revival, and they've just got they just premiered Shelby Oaks during Fantastic Fest, and like, so like, it steps and it's those forward moving steps, and like, it's something really fucking great about that. And so for the filmmaker, for somebody that was in the thing, or a crew member, like you're saying, little chuckles and things like that, like it matters to many more people than you can even figure. So even if there's seven people in the theater, like I said, or 400, the ripples of what it matters to folks does resonate, and that's a really positive thing.
Yeah, you know, I think go ahead.
Even, well, I can't say favorite, because the whole crew turning up for Beast of the Northwoods was great, but a favorite interaction was with the parents of the woman who made Or Not.
Where they were a delay.
Girl has pink slime that comes out of her mouth when she tries to kiss a boy, you know.
Oh, and, it took me a minute to place the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an unassuming title.
They told us that she had made it for her film class and, you know, showed it to the professor, and they encouraged her to submit it to the fest. And they, like, she couldn't believe that it got in, because she thought that just nobody would ever really see it.
Oh,
and
golly.
So we got to, like, sadly the woman herself couldn't be there, but her parents got to watch us watch it. It was just great having people come up and say, like, hey, I'm involved in one of the films. I said, oh, which one? And they would say it, and I would inevitably go, oh my god, I love that one.
Yeah,
it was, how'd you do that? Nice. You made a thing.
The,
which, of course, like, we love them. That's why they're in there. We picked them.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Is like, you'd be hard-pressed to find one we didn't like. But yeah, those interactions, too, though, with all those people. I don't know if this sounds braggy. It's not meant to sound braggy. But they all pretty much all said something along the lines of, hey, thanks for putting this on so that there is a place for me to submit a film to, you know. I've not worked on film on that end much. I don't know how hard it is to find screenings, or even if there's, you know, maybe there's less festivals since COVID. I don't know. But it was cool that people were like, hey, you're out here doing it and you gave us a place to show our thing. Like, so great. They were just excited about that, which was real encouraging for a thing that was an insane amount of work and, you know, caused many sleepless nights. But again, not complaining, but it's cool to have someone else go, yeah, we get it, because we probably worked, you know, in the same difficulty and, you know, drawbacks trying to put together the film. And it was just cool to watch everybody go, yeah, let's just, you know, we're all moving forward with the, you know, benefiting from each other's work. And
I always love that. I always love it. Like some of the big film festivals, it's always played for a joke. But if you know enough people in the entertainment industry, there was that thing of like, oh, we were working on it until like last night. And I'm like, oh, right. Ha, 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 ha. And it's like, that's not ha, ha, funny. That is, motherfucker probably slept 3 hours in 3 days. They had 9 people crammed in a living room, and they're just taking turns just like eating raw coffee grounds to try to figure out how to get a thing accomplished. Like if you watch that little making of thing of Talk to Me, it's like, you know, I mean, say what you want about their two movies, but like, you know, they're good positives and negatives, whatever else, but you watch what those guys were doing and what they were doing to get the thing done, and then doing the thing to get the thing to even a festival to get in front of any whatever. I mean, it's like there's no luxury whatsoever. This is like, I've got 3 pairs of socks to last me a week and a half. Hopefully I have a way to launder it in this country I've never been to. Like, it's, yeah, just sort of like, that's the level, that's what it is. Like, there's no glamour. There's just grinding through. Like, and I was thinking about Matt with the formatting of the damn hard drive.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually a great segue to just give a public shout out to Matt, the projectionist we worked with at the AMC in Roseville, who was just an absolute gem of a human being. Very knowledgeable, never got frazzled despite the near constant stream of emails and texts that he was getting from me. I don't know how, I mean, maybe if you've done a bunch of festivals, you know, if this is just shows how inexperienced we are, or if that is just what it's always like behind the scenes. But for those of you that attended, the morning, the festival of the Friday morning, you know, when the festival is going to start that night, I had 15 films that still didn't work. And was at the theater working with Matt, and I got it down to, I think, 4 that didn't work by Saturday morning, and 1 we ended up having to bail on. We never quite got it to load on the projector. It kept running into an error, but we would have had two-thirds of a festival if it wasn't for Matt's help. So
yeah,
you know, a point that I learned from doing live theater for so many years is you without your text there is no show. That is ever so important also with movie theaters. So yeah,
well, the one thing I would say to him, especially given all the blood, sweat and tears you had, you know, all the formatting bullshit and all the other kind of thing, the one thing I will tell you is I will think of a few instances, one of which was for the world premiere of the second Raid movie at South by Southwest, of which I waited many long amount of time for. And then they got it there. Gareth Evans was there, the whole thing. And somehow the DCP did not have the subtitles.
Mm-hmm. Oof.
The world premiere of this multi-million-dollar thing that's been distributed all around the world, and they couldn't get the DCP with the right subtitles. So, you know, it's like, even at that level, shit happens.
That exact problem was one of the problems I solved Saturday morning.
It's just
trying to get something with subtitles that didn't have it, and trying to use whatever the Russian equivalent of Dropbox is, and just going, this is crazy. But it worked. We got it finally. Dropbox. But it's touch and go there in Denver.
Oh man.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, we had a couple of minor technical things, like the Croatian stop motion one
had
no subtitles. But like happily and fascinatingly, we found out it didn't need them.
It absolutely plays. Yeah.
You, even if the dialogue was just Simlish, like it was just noise, it gets across every part of the story in all of the visuals and the way that they, like, the storytelling is so tight that it didn't even seem like we were supposed to know what they were saying. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The in the storied history of the Swedish chef, you know what he's making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's making the meatballs.
First burger. Yeah, exactly.
The sadder one, though, was Portraits of the Apocalypse. Somehow we got a dubbed version instead of a subtitled version.
Ah, gee.
Nice. And we're like, oh, but I promise this plays so much better with the original dialogue.
Yeah.
But it was still all right. So I think overall we learned that we want to do this and it's a thing worth doing. And now we have to figure out how to make it sustainable.
Yep.
And once we do that, then we'll be unstoppable, invincible.
Yeah. Step 3, profit.
Yeah. Step 2 just is make sure that Charlie gets his ass out here.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was the slight pallor over the weekend, was being like, man, I should have 2 people to be nudging with my elbows.
Mm-hmm. Like, you got 2 elbows. That's God gave you them for a reason.
Yeah. These elbows were made for nudging, and I'm all out. Nope, that didn't work.
And that's just what they do.
I'm like, what are you doing with your bubble gum?
Wait, how do you chew? Oh.
Goodness gracious sakes.
So my daughter kept singing this song about sunshine and lollipops. And every time she does, my brain goes to guitars and Cadillacs and hillbilly music. So she's going, sunshine and lollipops, and I'm going, and hillbilly music. Like, Dad, that's not how that goes. Like, well, how it goes in my head. This is what it's like in here. I'm trapped. I have to hear it. You have to hear it.
Well, before we...
what's the... Is it Duck's Breath Home Theater? The Ian Scholes, the Walk a Mile in My Head. That thing.
Before we jump into the movie, should we take a quick break since we've ran for a while talking about all this other good stuff?
Sure.
Let's do that. Oh, and real quick, too, before we take that break, once again, just to make sure we say it on here as well, thank you to everyone that was involved in any way, shape, or form with helping us make this thing happen. As we learned from, like, Film Freeway won't go out of their way to promote a first-year festival. I'm assuming that's because a lot of them probably don't make it to actually occurring, and I can see why, but we did, which makes us that much awesomer than the ones that didn't even make it that far. So if you help share the word or help people know that they should submit films, or you submitted a film or told a friend or helped make one of the films or showed up in person or work at the theater or any of that good stuff, all of it means the world to us, and we couldn't have done it without you. And don't worry, once again, when we get this around to the next one, we'll be asking for your help again. So if you want to be thanked even more, you can just do it next time too.
Ah!
See, it's like a pyramid scheme, but it's kind of a straight line.
Like a cube scheme.
Yeah. It's
a prison scheme.
Squarespace.
Yeah. It's a triangle scheme viewed from the side. It's just a line. It's
fine. Yeah, exactly. It's fine. All this makes perfect sense. I'm not still very, very tired.
We'll be back in a moment, though.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Queso.
Queso.
First things first, we'll talk about Sit Back, a horror short film, emphasis on the short, see and to say. I enjoy a movie that just has a brief gag and then just gets the hell on with its life, because we've all got things to do. Right. This just involves a guy picking up a chair off of the curb near his house, and instead of getting bed bugs, he gets eaten by the chair. And that's about it. And it's just a recliner that somebody is flapping the back of, and I really enjoy that.
It's so good. It's like that vacuum one we did a while back. It's just like someone just slightly off camera is just wiggling it around. Like, so
wasn't there one about, because there was Killer Pants at one point too, wasn't there?
Oh, Slacks.
Yeah, Slacks. Yeah, there was that one. Yes, there's always, I'll tell you what I like about this is, like, it's very lo-fi for sure. This is not somebody I don't think has, like, huge scads of experience. But what I do like is that when I see somebody who has, like, some skill, whether it's the framing of a thing or timing or something, that really makes it stand out. And in this one, the timing of the thing at the end with the dog was just like, it could not have been pitched perfect, more perfect. It was just sort of like you said, fighting, like, meow. It's just like, it was just perfect the way it was, everything about that. And that tells me that somebody was paying like really close attention to why the timing of that is critical to making that funny. And because it's like, and so, yeah, it's a little lo-fi for sure. This is, you know, it's, but it's like, that tells me that they're really paying attention to that part of it. I think that's awesome. That makes me really happy. So like, yeah, good for you for making this thing and really putting something into trying to make it work. Like, that's, like, that's awesome.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Just the right kind of effort and just the right runtime. Love it.
Sweet.
Then would you prefer to talk about Monster Island or Dangerous Animals?
Either way, I think I had a different, as per usual, I think I may have had a different experience than you guys, but we'll see.
All right. Well, let's kick that off then. Let's talk about Dangerous Animals or Los Animales Peligrosos.
Hell yeah.
This is like if Jaws and Silence of the Lambs had an ugly baby, I guess. What I mean is there are sharks and there are serial killers, and there are serial killers with elaborate rituals involving sharks.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're about to say sea lions. I was like, I don't remember sea lions in this, but...
No.
Well, that's... The costume department did a really good job making them look like people.
few people know this, but Jai Courtney is actually a sea lion, as it turns out.
Yeah, it's just three little sea lions in a suit.
So I will tell you what I enjoyed about this. Two main things. One, I was fully expecting, and not to you know, because we can, everybody have a different opinion. Josh was talking about the final shark thing. Like, I was expecting Sharknado level nonsense, and I think it was a lot better than Sharknado nonsense. Like, not like by like to the nth degree, but it was better looking than I was expecting. So that was part of it. There were certainly some parts with some stock footage and things that were a little clunky dunkle, but like the more parts would look better than what I was expecting. But the main thing that I really liked about this is like, you have your serial killer with the stupid rituals and a stupid thing that doesn't, you know, like, you know, whoever, you know, like you know, was he not breastfed enough? Was he breastfed too much? What caused this to happen? But whatever. And it's like, you know, you have your typical serial killer. Jai Courtney's having a lot of fun with that. What I liked about this is you got a female character who fucking fought.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where it's sort of like, it's not like, I was in a vapor death and then I got fell over. It's like, I'm going to bite my fucking finger off because my option is I'm Simpsonsing it up on one hand or I'm dead. Right. And like, that being the stakes and a movie actually like having the character take that seriously, like, this is not Saw. It's like, it's not, we're not seesawing in this, but like, to have that be the standard fucking rules. And I want that to be the standard all the time. And like, I get so tired of that. Like, kind of like, and then it's just sort of like, and then, yeah, that's it. It's just custard spine. I can't stand that. And it's like, so when you see that level of fight in a character, especially a female protagonist, I just think it's dope, and that made me happy.
I don't know what it is that, like, I was perfectly fine with cauterizing a wound with a beer can in Revenge. But I was not impressed with the thumb biting off in this one. Maybe because it's just, I feel like the vibe for this movie, weirdly up until that point, had been kind of believable. And then it's like, she bites off her own thumb. She wraps it up. She doesn't bleed out. She doesn't faint. She then like jumps into the ocean and doesn't just go fuck up the top and back down, right? And it's like at that moment this movie kind of changes into another thing, and that culminates in her like being floating in the water with the shark beside her, and the shark is just like reaches out and daps her on the knuckles, you know, with his fin. It's like, today for you, tomorrow for me, brah, and swims away. I was like, so that scene is like the scene from The Boat, you know, like the Greek movie The Boat, where he is like in the water with the dolphin or whatever. But it's also the scene from fucking Castaway. It's the whale going, sup, you know. I don't know, it's just a lot of this movie. Okay, some of this movie was fun. A lot of it to me was just so like derivative and tropey, and just normally I'm not that sensitive to it, but it was just, oh my God, of course he's doing that thing. Oh my God, of course he's got some crazy 70s needle drop so he can do his crazy serial killer dance. Like, I just could not get, this movie could not get out of its way enough for me to enjoy a lot of it. And then that last 15 minutes is just fucking insane. It's a completely different film. And yeah, I really thought the shark nyam looked real silly at the end of it. So yeah, I didn't quite twinkle my star.
The, like, this is one I saw in the theater. I went to go see something else and ended up, because it was like a day off, so I saw this as well. I was like, fuck it, I'll just stay there. And I think I like it a little more having watched it the second time. I think because the sort of tonal dissonance that the movie runs into, that I think is kind of what you're describing too, Josh. Like, I think when I first watched this, it was described as being torn between being like a tribute and or a parody of a certain type of movie, because it, when it goes kind of big with the comedy stuff and like our serial killer is sort of doing that like excited bulldog performance we got from Conor McGregor in the Roadhouse remake, like
yes sir,
he's just like kind of just, you sort of love him, but then a couple of times when he goes like intense and serious, it's legit scary. And then there's other times where he doesn't, you go, oh, you're doing the scary guy thing that I can tell that you've seen other movies do. And they kind of have that same relationship with the layers of the serial killer weirdness. Cause like, I get the filming it thing. Like, that makes perfect sense to me. But then it's like, ah, but I also have to clip a little bit of your hair for a souvenir. I'm like, okay, fine. We've seen, you know, enough other true crime bullshit. Oh, nope. He's got to also tie it into a fishing lure that he then puts inside the VHS case. So that I'm like, this is getting, I get it. Like, you're kind of hammering this one past the point of understanding. And I think that's maybe why this isn't like an all-timer super fun movie for me. I enjoy it though. Like, this is a great, like, you know, weekend folding laundry movie, but the serious bits and the occasional bits of gore are a little too dark for the comedic tone. And yeah. I think I would sort of rather this leaned into being a little bigger, a little broader. I do actually like, you know, our protagonist Zephyr is not given the best material to work with throughout the movie, but I do think is capable and is able to play a character that is capable. Like, I think I would watch that character in a slightly different movie and probably like them even more. But yeah, I sort of liked the way they went with that. I liked our little rich guy not being all the usual stereotypes of little rich guy.
Yes, that's another thing that I liked about this was that, yeah.
Their relationship kind of subverting the usual pitfalls was pretty cool. I like, maybe that was like super obvious and whatever, but like, I just was kind of refreshing to go, okay, like, I don't quite know if this guy even matters, you know? And then it turns out later in the movie he does, but they played it, I think, just right at the beginning where you didn't need that. And like her little moment of deciding whether or not to like admit that she liked hanging out with this guy or just tell him like, yeah, it's, you know, free beach. You can come here if you want. I don't care. Like, that's a pretty good human moment for a character that didn't need to be that drawn that well, I guess, you know?
Yeah. The dialogue's a little rough until they get, like, both get in the van.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I can't tell if this guy just has very weak game or if this is written poorly. Like, I'm not quite sure. But once you get into it, I like it. Yeah. I like, I think we can coin the phrase Manic Pixie Dream Final Girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because her name is Zephyr and she's a free spirit and she lives in her van and she just like surfs, brah, you know?
And I like that she's not likable.
Yeah,
but I like, that's one of the other things, like it could have very easily, and I don't know anything about the person who wrote this at all. I don't know anything about them, but like I like that she could have absolutely been like shrill who comes around or like, you know, or sees the error of their ways, whatever else. And it's like, no, she's just kind of prickly, and some people are like, that's just sort of their demeanor, and it's, you know, like, doesn't make them bad people, they're just that.
Charlie, you just unlocked what the comparison was my brain was trying to make. It's Julia Stiles from the beginning of 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
it's she's just kind of that. She's like, no, I've got my shit. You're a waste of time. Get out of my way. I know what I do and I do it well. And like, yeah, it's just a very particular person. And yeah, it does work to make that character more interesting, I think, right from the jump.
Well, but it's also like, yeah, it's one of those things where she doesn't just like soften. It's more just becomes that she changes because of the legitimate life and death component, which is absolutely legitimate. And yeah. It's sort of like, but I just think it's interesting and kind of cool when you give a female character just sort of like dynamics of a character. They don't have to be fixed. And it's sort of like, that's that I really liked. The other thing I liked too was learning about that actress, is it Hattie or Hassie or whatever her name is. So she comes from a professional horse person. And she's actually married to Ryan Bingham, who's a bull rider and then a musician. And it's like, so in real life, she's like a cowboy person. But to see like her ease, like on a boat in the water, like all that kind of stuff, I was like that's pretty dope. Like that's like, well done. Like that was cool. But I'm gonna overstate it. But I just, 'cause like, this is not like necessarily like, you know, just the epitome of writing or whatever else. But I just think it's cool to have a female character that's just sort of like doesn't have to be fixed or doesn't have to be like. Like, oh, if they just, you know, if they just had their Wheaties in the morning, they'd be, if they're off their meds or, you know, like whatever bullshit, you know, it's not that. It's like, she still is her. It's just, there's a level of that's what it is, period, the end of story, which I think is great. And then coupling that with having a movie allowing a female character to actually just like, actually fight and not accidentally happen, just fall into accidentally winning. Like, I just think it's cool. And it's like, to that I really dug. And so it is weird that like, from tonality standpoint, Jai Courtney is a little at 11. But I think that is his setting. So like, you know, and certainly I think you could have, you know, spun it out. But what I do, to go back to their side of it again, to kind of praise simplicity, the thing with the VHS to recording them and the thing with the hair bits and the whole thing, like it's such a serial killer kind of like keeping a trophy and blah, 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 blah. But it also, we don't get 20 minutes of some goddamn backstory where he was like sexually assaulted with a fish or something. And it's just like, and then it becomes this fucking thing. And it's like, it doesn't become a Rob Zombie thing where it's like everything becomes sticky.
Yeah.
Why did the fish do it? Why did he sexually assault you? I assume for the halibut.
The fact that I didn't see that coming makes it
so much sweeter.
I know. I hate that. I was just going. Where is this going? I wonder what's happening. And then
This is like the scene. This is a scene from The Simpsons where Sideshow Bob like steps on like multiple rakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Tunk, tunk. golly.
The thought that I kept having, and I think it's just. Maybe that I've seen too many movies. I don't know. The thought that I kept having was, this is people who grew up watching Tarantino are now doing the Tarantino things that Tarantino interpreted from the things that he grew up watching in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's like we're one generation removed. Like this character is putting on a 70s song and dancing around because of Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Not because of
the band.
Its source. Yeah. It's. And so it just kind of made me go, yeah, I get it, dude. Like we all liked Pulp Fiction. And so we get like, there's a little bit of Kill Bill in this. There's a whole lot of Death Proof in this, which is one of my least favorite things that Tarantino's ever done. And then there's like some elements of Silence of the Lambs and Wolf Creek and like, I don't know. It just didn't feel like it ever got its own mojo working. By the way, Jess watched this with me and she said her biggest complaint was that the boat never moves. She's like, even when the boat is out on the water and there are waves in front of the boat does not bob. And when you go into the interior, the boat is stock still.
Yeah, like, yeah, when he sets up the camera tripod like 2 feet from the side of the boat, and that's when I went, that boat does not move whatsoever, does it? That's when I noticed it. I was like, that's strange.
Well, that is an amazing anchor. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Well, there is that, and then it also, a boat of that size has to be operated by like four people. You know, that's beside the point.
Not if you have shark blood or whatever he did.
Well, the whole thing about the fucking thing where, like, he's up when she's, like, trying to, she's first trying to get out of the thing. She's banging on the bed frame or whatever else, and he's sitting up, like, in, like, the galley area. And if, like, if it was a boat that could be operated by one human, it wouldn't be, like, a small lunchroom. It would be, like a two seats bolted to the wall with a table about the size of a checkerboard and, like, a little kind of little tube kitchen. And the whole thing would be about 12, 14 feet total. And, like, it looks like a, kind of like a lunchroom of, like, a small diner. And it's like, that is a boat that cannot be operated by one human. Like, that's not how that works. I do think it's interesting, though, from a filmmaker's to your point, Josh, so that the fellow that did this one, he's an Australian fellow, and this is the first one he's directed, to my knowledge, to what I can see anyway, that he didn't write. So he directed this one, but he did Devil's Candy and he did The Loved Ones.
That was the surprising thing. I was like, both of those were incredibly original. But that makes sense. If he didn't write it, I could see that.
So it's interesting. That's kind of makes it interesting because it's like maybe with certain creative types that, you know, so everybody works a little differently, I guess. But like maybe if it's one of those things where if you're the one involved in the writing and the story making process, that like you're picking up on those influences that you say, Joshua, and like, but they get folded in a way that like is slightly different than if you're working with somebody else's kind of material and like what you're going to apply to it, you know, because like thinking about the fucking Loved Ones, like there are scenes in the Loved Ones where like, I mean, it's been a while since I watched that one, but it's like there are scenes in that one that it just like I can feel under my fucking fingernails even now. And it's like, and that's just from acting, from directing, from the whole bit. And then there's things in Devil's Candy where I just gotta go giggity giggity boogity boogity, and it's just sort of like, and I love that one a lot more than I know you guys did, but like I fucking love that movie. I think it's great. And so it's sort of like, and so yeah, you go into this environment and he hasn't written the thing, and it's like, so it makes you wonder if there becomes a disconnect, like a style disconnect maybe, and like then you get that like pasted on kind of, like I was telling Kristen, because I kind of had some similar thought that you did, Josh. I was telling Kristen that like it reminds me of that thing in the Iron Giant where she goes into the barn and sees the Iron Giant, which he's like put a bunch of metal stuff on it to like, you know, like make it look like a sculpture. And she's like, I love the robot part, but the other extra parts seem kind of tacked on. it kind of makes you think of that kind of like that, where like some of those pastiche things and some of those kind of stylistic things do feel a bit more applique than they do feel like organic, I guess. That would be the way I would say that, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, the fact that they did this cost them $2 million to make it, and they got close to $8 million all told. So I mean, like that puts it in the black, but not by a ton, but by a decent bit. So I was like, that's cool.
It's not quite Blumhouse money, but and as always with an independent film, I'm happy that people enjoyed it, and I'm happy that it got made. But for me, it's like a, I don't know, it's like a 6 out of 10. It's just kind of lackluster and then irritating occasionally.
Oh, fucking stuff. Well, the very, very last thing, super, super fast. The other thing is, and maybe this is like learning something later than applying it to it or whatever, but fuck it, I don't care. Is like, being an Australian filmmaker, the fucking stabbings in this are like, you know, we don't get that in the US really. Where like we get a lot of like swoosh, and then it goes whoa, and then you go whoa, and then you get this 5 more cuts. This is like in camera, stabby, 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 and, like right in the throat, fuck, pum, 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 like fuck, like it's just like you have no escape.
Yeah,
like,
the stabulation is much more John Wick, where it's just like incredibly efficient and not like not shot to look pretty.
Yeah, it was just like god dang, it felt more like Wolf Creek than it felt like some kind of like an action slasher thing, like. It just had that part of it, and that maybe go to the thing about the tone issue is like sometimes where it's like that bit, especially with the two, like the brunette lady and the guy, the early part where just he's right to the throat, pop pop pop, and I'm like fuck me, and it's just like that was really kind of got my attention, like jeez, and it's like that, oh yeah, not segment, like, oh, there you go.
That opening bit does definitely wake one up.
Yeah,
if it had continued in that vein,
I fully enjoyed the calming breathing exercise that ends up being him them into doing Baby Shark. Like that shit's funny.
That was hilarious.
That was really, really good. I was like, see, and like again, like that dude is so charismatic that, like, I like him as a villain. I think if he toned some of the what felt like obligatory weird serial killer shit down a little more and just make him kind of reckless, that's a little more interesting, because I wanted to watch him continue being that kind of big and weird.
This may be one of the few serial killer movies I've seen where it's not a sexual thing for him at all.
That was another thing. Yeah.
I forgot. I was going to mention props for that.
Yeah, there's not a single weird, creepy moment.
He's watching these videos and he's not even jacking off. Like, somehow that's weirder.
Yeah, he just really likes getting up close and personal with watching sharks eat people, you know? And, like, I guess that's, you know, you nearly get eaten by a shark yourself and you get crazy obsessed with them or whatever, but, like...
Sharks killed my father and raped my mother. Sorry.
Yeah, ripped the horses.
Oh, yeah. Ratings. So, yeah, for me, I'll say it's a 7 out of 10 human lures. Yeah, I think for, like, I have kind of the same take as you did there, Josh. I think, but for me, like, the parts I did, like, bubbled up a little heavier than the, that didn't make any sense. That's terrible language. But those kind of, those rose to the top for me so I could enjoy them enough to make the overall experience fun. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the positives that I mentioned kind of outweighed some of the negatives. I mean, I do ultimately always, you know, and I know it's never fair, but I do also often wonder about scale, and ultimately if the scale of this is slightly larger, if the body count is slightly larger, if there's some other components that you can buoy out some of the stuff, then maybe the tonality stuff can be more even. But maybe that can be part of it too. But I really, hats off to having a female character that doesn't have to be goddamn fixed, and to have a level of fight when it's like life or death, when it's like not like a Saw movie, like your choice, but it's more just sort of like there's a legit fight at every component of it. And I just think it's fucking cool. And so, yeah, so I enjoyed a lot of that kind of stuff. So despite some of the faults and things along those lines, I guess I'll be the high man on the total ball. It's like, I'll be like 7.5 out of 10. Like, I thought I enjoyed it. And yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. Although I kept thinking, the fucking cabinet where he puts the VHSs in, I kept thinking of, must have been the second Wolf Creek movie with the epic historic line, wall of evidence. And I was just sort of like, when he locks it with that little rinky dink little key of like, oh, that lock could not be defeated by anything other than like a screwdriver.
Yeah. That's the liquor cabinet every teenager hopes their parents have.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that could be just unlock with a stick. It's like, okay, silly bitch.
Put one of those doorknobs from the bathroom on there, and unless you have a flat braided screwdriver, you can't get open. Or like a really thick fingernail is fine too.
Yes.
Or if you just push the pad of your thumb in there real hard, you could probably. Yeah. I will say, not to pile on, but I just looked at the letterbox and realized I forgot to complain about the whole Ooby Dooby thing.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like that.
Because that is like 90s brand of playful banter. And at this point, it's like, so these two 20-somethings are bonding over Creedence Clearwater Revival. That just felt like very Ready Player One kind of.
It feels patty for sure.
Gen X fantasy of 20-somethings being enamored by, and him being super into this cheesy song too. Like, and then the Ooby Dooby motherfucker, like, shut up. Like, you do not get to watch any more Rodriguez, any more Tarantino movies. You got to go back to basics and learn the principles, and then maybe you can do dumb shit like that, like they do.
Yeah, go dirty up your Harry.
Yeah. Or Harry up your dirty. Why not?
Yeah, if you're old enough.
Dirty up your Harry and Harry up your Potter.
Potter, damn, you killed her.
The doing the silly things, though, that just reminded me the. You remember from Inglourious Basterds, you know, the opening sequence with Christoph Waltz and how fucking chilling that is, like where it's just light and light and light. And then once the gravity starts to set in, you're like, oh, fuck me. And it's just like this how sadistic and awful and just, the way that whole thing goes and how fucking great Christoph Waltz is. So he's in this new season of Only Murders in the Building. And he's playing this billionaire character that's like way above the top, but it's very silly. But he can deliver these goofy goofball lines that, like, for some reason or other, and it's not fair to anyone else, but it's like what you have done prior to this allows you to do this goofy silly thing. And like he has this line in the most recent episode of Only Murders where he goes, "You motherfuckers beat us." And it's so fucking dumb, but it works so beautifully because it comes out of his face. It's like, I think it just comes from, like, you know, you've earned that somehow. And it's just like, and it's just, it works so beautifully. So, like, you know, in that kind of situation, like, as you say, like, with those references and stuff, like, you gotta kind of live those out a bit for it to be either make it less specific or make it very specific. And somebody's a huge music weirdo. Like, one of those two, like, not in the middle. it is what it is.
Have you heard of KC and the Sunshine Band? Like, stop it. Stop it right now. Okay, let's talk about the rounding or haciendo rondas. This is about a doctor who is being plagued with strange visions and is concerned that one of his patients is being actively harmed by someone that she loves and trusts. And first off, this movie is set in hospitals that are so dimly lit that it makes Nosferatu look like a Carl Hyacin novel, like sun-drenched beaches. Like, you could barely see this fucking place, and they're doing surgery in there, which I thought was very strange.
Maybe it's the same place where they did Flatliners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This Gloom Hospital. Come on down to Gloom Hospital. In the gloaming, we shall treat you. It's like some of the scenes, they just look like shadow puppets. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, and so, a lot of the movie looks like that too, not just in the hospital. Like, when they're in their house, and like when he's visiting with the lady later on, wherever else, and so like, why don't you have any lights on?
When he's visiting the like, what is it, like a CPS lady or whatever? I had that same thing where I'm like, this. You both walked into this room and neither one of you reached for a light switch.
Like, and now it's too awkward.
Like you both sat down expecting the other one would get it. And now you're like, well, shit, but yeah, it is kind of comical, how ridiculous it is. This just as a vibe check, like, was this just kind of sometimes?
I thought it was a good, like, by the end of it, it is somewhere between a Grey's Anatomy episode and a Lifetime Channel movie.
Yeah.
Because it quickly becomes a medical whodunit more than anything. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, I don't know. My wife got into Grey's Anatomy as like the thing to watch while she just does the dot art, you know, that she does. And so she's seen all 20 seasons twice. So I have a keen eye for that, and I just kept expecting like McDreamy to walk by too, but it just seemed like if you took a B plot from Grey's Anatomy and just blew it out to feature length, and then it's like disappointing that the monster stuff is just his hallucination, fugue state, whatever, because of the tragedy of his backstory, which is pretty fucking tragic.
Yeah,
but at the same time, just doesn't really inform the movie all that much. So yeah, I don't think it added up to much.
Yeah, I think it's
cool puppet thing.
Elder
God puppet.
I think it's a little slight. I think our lead dude, I'm looking it up here real quick. I don't remember his name. Namir Smallwood.
Yeah.
I think he's great. Like, that dude is doing some interesting stuff. Like, I like that performance, even though he's not always given the most interesting stuff in the world to do. But there were two or three characters where I was like, all right, I like the performance here. I kind of wish there was something a little more happening. Like, I do feel that once we kind of get the okay, you've got unprocessed trauma that's affecting you and causing you to neglect other aspects of your life, and we're sort of watching the undoing of a man. Like, I feel like that becomes clear even before we know like the full story about the case with his mom and everything. It becomes clear a little too early for me, because then I had a long time to sit with it before they were ready to kind of move the ball again. And I think that just made the movie feel like it just hung around a little too long for me. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and to your point, Joshua, about the kind of the plotting part of it. I mean, I think that's kind of undeniable. Like, it sort of, it does play a little, and I hate to use this word, but it does play a little bit like kind of like lo-fi, melodramatic. But in the same breath, I would almost like contradict myself in saying that, like, but I appreciate somebody aspiring to seriousness without aspiring to self-importance.
Yeah.
It's like that part of it, like, I don't know, maybe they all sit around like smelling their own farts, like, but I don't get that feeling. I kind of more just sort of like, I appreciate that somebody is doing something and trying to sand around the edges to a degree at which, the one that we watched a while back that was like, it's supposed to be like a crime drama, but there's like a voodoo component to it. Like, there's like a voodoo shop and...
Terrence
Howard?
Yeah, that one.
Terrence Howard, yeah.
And like...
I think it was both, wasn't it?
Sure.
I think they were both in that. I could be wrong. Anyway,
But that one is like, there's so... And I'm going to be a little meaner than I like to be, but like, there appeared to be so little effort into making it like look like a movie, have a kind of a flow of a plot, having things that like just like there was just it was like the it was like the it was like auditing every part of what makes a movie a thing. Like, I'm going to show up, but I'm not going to expect a grade type of a approach to that thing, or the way it's lit and it was shot or whatever else. And so, like, whatever, it is what it is. But like with this, I just like there was a lot of moments watching through this where like it just appears as though like there's some real consideration given to like the look of things and like the feel of things and stuff. And like, yeah, the blending in of the supernatural component or not the supernatural component, that kind of that part of it. I mean, it's a little rough edged for sure. There's something about the quality of what they were going after that I kind of liked. That being said, the problem of the B or C level plot from like a medical kind of a drama suspensey kind of thing doesn't do it a lot of favors, because like, even though from a plotting standpoint and a pacing standpoint, whatever else, they don't ever just sit down and sort of stare off in the infinitum for hours on end. It does kind of have like, there's less, unless you're the Coen brothers, having things that are inconsequential plot wise can't really drive it forward super strong.
Yeah.
like there's a few people on the planet that figured out how to do that. The Coens are one of the few that can do it, but like almost anybody else, it kind of just feels like less consequential to be like, okay, well, so what was it we're hung up on this part of it, like it's kind of one of the next thing, and that just sort of makes it feel kind of shallow in that respect. But there's a lot about this that I didn't appreciate. I just, not amounting to much, I think, is not an unfair description without kind of like failing to acknowledge that there's a lot of elements of this that showed a lot of care and art to it. So like, there's a lot that I appreciate about it. I just wish that there was a much bulkier plot, because to your point, Matt, like the fellow that plays the lead, Smallwood, like that fellow, I don't get the acting through the eyebrows thing. I get more of like there's somebody really trying to live in this set of character, but unfortunately there's only like a couple pages in that pamphlet kind of a feel to it, and then as it plots along to the second and third act, especially, I'm like, okay, now we're going to really hit into high gear. And it's like, no, we're going to do a lot of the more of the wakey, sleepy, wakey sort of bits. And then it kind of just sort of drifts into the end. And it's sort of like, okay, well, so it's sort of, I don't know. It's like one of those ones that you almost get frustrated with a little bit. 'Cause you're like, man, there was these opportunities to bring more meat to that part of it, but that didn't happen. It's like, nuts. Martin. So, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those things. Like, and I've been watching Task on HBO, which is fucking amazing. It's goddamn great. I mean, I know I'm much more inclined to your kind of crime thriller kind of things than other folks are. And so, but it's like, it's fucking fantastic. But what's amazing about that show is that they can make, it's not a complicated plot necessarily, but it's like, as they add things to it, it adds levels of tension and suspense and like nervousness that are not like manufactured or sort of superficial. It's just like, they're just become part of the stew. And like, it just the whole water level continues to rise. And it's like, it's really fucking impressive. And I don't think easy to pull off well. And it's just really goddamn good, even though it's not super complex. I mean, I love complex ones too, but like, it's just not super complex. It's just, as things get added to it, it's just like that temperature rises, the water rises. And it's like, this could use more of that. Where it's like, as you say, Josh, the backstory is very fucking sad. And like, yes, absolutely. But then what in present time, like, what do we do to add more stakes? What do we do to add consequences for a second, third, fourth person? What do we do to, you know, what do we do to all those things? Because that's what makes that water level rise in a way that feels heftier. So
I'll bet.
You know.
I'll bet I would feel better about this if it were the pilot for a series. If it was like 65 minutes long and was just setting up, like, here is this guy, he's got some issues, he's trying to deal with, you know, all of the weird shit that's happening in his own life and also in a hospital that's too dark to see what you're doing. And knowing that he's going to have like case of the week for a while, I think would make it better. Yeah, and just having it packaged as a movie that is just giving us that kind of disease of the week seemed kind of weird. So for me, like, it's the same ballpark as Dangerous Animals. It's like, it's a 6 out of 10 with just like a, you know, I'm not mad at it, but I'm just not much of anything at it.
You just touched on something, Josh, a TM kind of thing. Why has there not been a Showtime or a HBO or whatever series, or even AMC or whatever else, that is a medical suspense thriller thing with supernatural stuff in it?
Mm.
Like, why does that not exist? Because you have the life and death stuff, and it's an amazing environment to really make some stuff happen. I mean, like, fucking Watch the Pit. Like, Jesus Christ, is that an incredibly well-made thing. But, like, why is there not something that's set in a medical situation like that, in an emergency room, in a hospital, in something like this, that brings in supernatural elements? Because, like, I'm just racking my brain. I can't think of a single one. I'm thinking about it.
God damn it, intern Willie. It's never lupus. I didn't say lupus. I said lichen.
Rawr.
I'd be into that, dude. I'm for it.
Perhaps they could have some kind of werewolf ambulance.
Heyo, unofficial crossover. What? Slotted for 2028.
They better be paying for that product placement.
Shaboose.
I'm sure they got tons of money to pay for product placement.
Excellent.
Yeah. They're living it big in, what, Pittsburgh? So.
Pittsburgh, by the way, was it University of Pittsburgh just added a horror studies degree? Did you see that?
Nice. I've been in email contact with those folks for a while.
It's a trip. It's so cool. I was like, I love it.
It's
like,
about their stuff sometimes. It's cool.
Yeah, it's dope. It's like, yeah, well done.
Yeah. Once again, I got distracted in the middle of the rating thing. I don't think this is a particularly strong film. It is just sort of like, I guess comparing it to a television medical drama is the most apt comparison, which is perhaps for me, because I don't watch those. I just kind of find every episode to be the same. It's like watching Law and Order. I just don't get the point. And so this was sort of the kind of thing that I would be, yep, I could have this on and sort of half watch and pay attention, but it would need more to really make me sit up and pay attention than the limited mystery I think we got here. Like I said, I really enjoyed some of the performances. Our lead especially is fantastic. So I don't know. I hope to see something cool from these folks at another movie. But for, yeah, like 5, just kind of, we'll say neutral. Not bad, but nothing that really sparked my interest.
Well, I think I guess I'm going to be a high man on the totem pole again. Like, you know, like I said, there's everything that we've highlighted for sure. I certainly agree and certainly believe, but there's enough go that I really like, and I can't put my finger on it, but it's like the reason why a thing like the Terrence Howard one just doesn't work on like 53 different levels makes something like this feel like they are asking you to kind of be part of it. I don't know if that's not what we're looking for either, but like I think there's enough of that part of it that has going for it, and there's especially the way it looks. There's a really cool, like, a lot of it. Some of the supernaturally woogie boogie bits. I mean, it's just limitations of what it is, but there's a lot of other components of it do have a good look, like have an interesting look. Like there's parts, especially in the third act, that kind of reminded me a little bit of like Night Call a little bit at times. Where like it had started to move the camera around, and not in a gimmicky, shaky, nauseating way, but just has a move to it that I think that I liked. I would definitely want to see what these folks involved with this are going to work on or what they're going to be doing, because this definitely seems like it has a seriousness without that self-importance that I kind of dig. So even though, like I said, plotting wise, you could definitely use some more meat on the bone, and then the fucking gross shit on his toe.
Yeah. Oh God, that was
just so unpleasant. I was like, tough. God, just not a thing. So yeah, so I'll be outside high minutes on a pull. I guess I'll say 6.5, 6.5 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10. We're just drowning in millions of dollars of malpractice lawsuits. Like, have we looked into bulbs? Have we looked into bulbs? Out of 10.
I'm saying no. There must be ambiance. Robert Eggers Hospital is where we are, and.
Robert Eggers Memorial. Thump, ow! Like I ran into the door again.
Wouldst thou live deliciously? I'm not even going to live to see tomorrow because my surgeon can't see. All right. Finally, we have Monster Island, or La Isla de Monstruos.
Hell yeah.
Which is about a Japanese soldier during World War II getting trapped on an island with an American soldier. American soldier, British soldier, some bloke. Yeah, British soldier and a gill man.
Yeah.
So it is man versus gill man. Gill man.
Yes.
And this is a solid ass little monster movie. I think that's where I landed on it. I feel like it could have lost at least 10 to 15 minutes because it keeps flashing back to things that we just saw. But otherwise, yeah. Like, it kind of whips the llama's ass. Like, it does what it needs to do.
Well, and I find this so interesting because, like, did you guys get the feeling of how or maybe not early on, that's not the right way to say it, but, like, in the first chunk, you're like, okay, this is going to become, like, an enemy mine thing.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Just, that's what we're going to get. And it's like, but the dynamic changes in, like, I'm going to make your life better. You're going to make my life better. We're going to be more enriched for this experience. It's more just sort of like it's like there's levels of fucked, but we're currently on the same level of fucked. So like, that's going to be kind of our short-term unspoken plan. And like, then it's like, oh, well then your reality completely shifts with the existence of this fucking thing. And then all the rest of the components of this. And you're just like, all right, new plan. And it's sort of like, and it's so it becomes less about that like enrichment goal thing, and just becomes a survival thing. And it's like, whoa, that's a little more gritty than I was expecting.
Well, it is to dip into the deep nerd. It's Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. It's two people who have to become friends instead of enemies and work together against a common foe, much as Picard and the Temerian captain had to do in the episode Darmok, even though Picard didn't at first understand that they were saying Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra was a reference to an ancient myth that these people had, because that was all of their dialogue with each other was ancient myths. So, you know, if you're going to pull a Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, that's what you do. And you're working together with a former enemy to defeat something that is an existential threat to you both. The more you know.
Is that related to that like holodeck simulation that no one can win, the like Quiznak paddywhack or whatever?
I thought it would be the Kobayashi Maru, sir.
Yeah, that's the one.
I like that version.
No, the Quiznak paddywhack is the guy who can make it rain on Arrakis.
I like the directive. A directive is good for us.
God, I had such a beautiful moment recently. I realized that Oliver had never seen any of like the old memes.
Oh, God. I did that with the boy once. It was a hoot.
It's sad because the death of Flash made some of them not work as well. So like,
yeah, I suppose.
I found a Badger Mushroom on YouTube that was a minute 35. And like, that will not do.
No.
So here's one that's 10 hours long. We're going to watch this for a little while. But the fun part of it was that the audio and video would get out of sync over time as the Flash animation looped. And you know, it's like, you can't quite capture that. But I got to show him We Like the Moon.
Nice.
And he's like, what the fuck was that? And I'm like, okay. So now here is a commercial from a sandwich shop that saw that and thought, that will sell sandwiches
for so like years.
We like the subs. Like long after anybody had ever, well, and like, you got to imagine like 300 people saw the original one when it was on Rather Good, right? Like maybe 3,000. So the vast majority of people were introduced to these things with no context.
Well, but I just mean like how long they did it for. Like that was the thing. It wasn't just like one ad that was fucking weird. It was like, that was years of Quiznos ads with those fucking things.
Yeah, I'm happy for the Rather Good guy. You know, he didn't get anything off of turning Jamie Lee Curtis into a samurai florist.
Jesus Christ. The little man in my head that operates the library card is just like, fuck it, I'm quitting. I can't. It's so dusty down here. I swear to God, there's mold. I'm just stop with the trying to find this data. It's in here. I don't want to find it.
Yeah, Rather Good still out there, still got all their shit up. Monster Island has nothing to do with any of those things, but I honestly don't have a whole lot to say about it. I was kind of surprised how fast the two dudes get separated after they have their bonding.
Yeah, time. I assumed that would be kind of the deal, was those two versus the...
That nerved me out, though. That definitely made it very tense. Like, it kept a level of ugh to it, that because the way this thing operates is like, it doesn't necessarily have like a predator approach to things. Like predator does a lot of like, I'm gonna sit in the tree and I'm gonna click about it for a while, and then they're just gonna decimate you in 93 different ways. This thing is sort of like a and it's like that's it, and it's like it's just, there's no like, it's quick. And so like, when you don't have two sets of eyes kind of peering out into things, we all know from the, you know, the Jurassic Park rule, which is that if you don't look to your side, you're gonna get, you know, clever girl. And it's like, and so when you know, them separated, it's like that just made it more tense for longer. That it definitely, there's definitely some moments where it's like, yeah, just definitely was felt very on edge.
I definitely had a moment watching this where I decided I wasn't aware I had an opinion on what kind of mouth Gilman should have, but I do apparently, because I don't like a big pokey toothy mouth Gilman. I think I like a more subtle Gilman mouth.
Yeah, that was the one. I mean, it looks cool in silhouette the first time he goes,
right.
But then you're just like, yeah, but how you chew.
Exactly.
How you chew stuff.
I have trouble with the like elaborately impractical monsters unless they're part of like an ever shifting Lovecraftian horror. Like, it, that's fine for like In the Mouth of Madness, but like here it's like, hey, you're supposed to just be an extant thing that just runs around and has a life. Like, yeah, you can't feed yourself that. Like that.
The upper half of his face is kind of Sleestak looking. He's got like Sleestak eyes. Mm-hmm. And instead of like the more Gilman, like traditional Gilman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good look though. I like the overall, I like the design. I think it's fun. It's got a good, just like dude in a suit. I like that.
There's a scene in this where they encounter the egg of the Gill person, and boy did they kill the shit out of that baby.
Yeah.
That is like orca levels of just batting about a fetus. They're like, you know, we're gonna come into your home and we're gonna desecrate it and we're gonna kick the shit out of you, and we are gonna murder your child so hard. Yeah, I mean, like, no wonder it's pissed off. And I thought for a little while there was going to be the like, ah, oh, yes, we are apex predators. We're not so different, you and I. Like, I can understand you and your motivations. Of course, you're not just a brute that's motivated by violence. Like, no, there's not like a détente, you know, there's no like parley between the factions and no realizing that the greatest enemy is man. The greatest enemy is the creepy gill man with the big old teeth.
Well, that's kind of like, yeah, that's. I'm glad you mentioned that, Joshua, because that was another thing about that I liked about this is that ultimately, like, we don't need a big to do. Like, I mean, I have an immense amount of affection for Godzilla in nearly every iteration, but it's like this would not have worked for particularly well if it was like, and now we're going to spend 25 minutes talking about nuclear or some kind of waste material or some kind of something like bleh. It just doesn't work. It's just like, this is nature. Nature and the shit out of things, and it's just like, good, that's what we need. We don't need the rest of it. It's not necessary. And so I'm glad they didn't go that route. And there also wasn't there was, you know, you added some more bodies to the pile in kind of clever and interesting sort of ways that you know, it was just sort of like, you know, again, I was a lot more tensed up in this watching this when I was expecting. It was just sort of like, it's like, oh man, this is sort of like, just yeah, I was expecting to kind of be like, okay, this is a dumb romp around this island type of a thing, but I really excited. I got more like, kind of more tensed up with a lot of parts of this. And credit to them for, I mean, clearly they didn't have like all the money in the world, and because the monster, there's some things, it's not whatever. But in general, like, this looks fucking good, like way better than I would have expected, honestly.
I mean, the location that they're filming at is giving them a lot of help there too. It just, it's yeah. Beautiful to look at.
Yeah, for sure.
They didn't crash into one of those ugly desert islands.
Yeah, very photogenic desert island.
Not a lot of desert, to be honest.
It's true.
I'm just looking to see. Yeah, like, the only damning that I have is the faint praise kind of damning, where, like, this is a solid movie to me. Like, it just sticks around like a solid 7.5 the whole time and gives you exactly what you would expect from it. It's like, it's the eating at Applebee's.
Sure.
Because it's not exceptional, but it tastes good. Like, gets the job done, and it's, you know what you're going to get and you get it. I think something like Sweetheart, if you want to be more thrilled and want something like a little meaner and a little more,
yeah,
more amped up. But and I feel strongly that it could have been 85 minutes or 80, and it does feel like it gets longer as it goes. But other than that, yeah, like, this is for me, it's a solid 7.5 Gills Manning, who was like Peyton and Eli's brother.
Yeah, it's the fifth brother, fourth brother, I guess.
Yeah, I think same neighborhood for kind of the same reasons. Like, this is just this was on what, Shudder? Is that where we watched this?
I think so, either Shudder or AMC. All Shudder.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, that's the exact kind of thing that Shudder exists for. Like, or I guess Tubi also does a pretty good job of this. It's just finding like horror movies that will be fun for fans of horror, but probably, you know, your casual fan that only watches a scary movie or two in October wouldn't really give a shit about. So, like, yeah, this is great. Like, this is clearly made for an audience of people that already like horror, and that's me. So, yeah, like, I'll say 7 out of 10 overly orthodontured Gilman.
You see, try to picture that motherfucker eating popcorn.
Right?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of right in that same ballpark. There's a lot to like about this. It has a great look to it. I mean, certainly there could be something to be said for a couple of the things on the Gilman, but I mean, I don't think it's, you know, it's still a lot more suspenseful and tense than I was expecting it to be. To Josh's point, I think, you know, maybe a little bit of trimming or kind of changing the dynamic slightly, but I certainly did find a lot of the parts where they were separated out, you know, interesting. I also really give them credit for like allowing our guys to get hurt, like, you know, when they tumble down the hill, and it's like, I mean, they're fucked up, and it's like, yes, thank you. Like, I kind of, I think it sounds sadistic, but like, I kind of dig that. Like, it's sort of like, good. Like, this is like, this adds something more to it. And then also that scene on the beach when our guy gets the two other kind of survivory guys sort of arrive, and like how tense that is, because realizing he's still got the leg iron on his foot, and our guys, like the British fellow's hiding, like, and that, how that dynamic plays out is like, that's well done. Like that's just good for writing, but it's also really good for just the way it was edited and put together. So like, yeah, a lot of just, you know, good heavy lifting for that kind of stuff. And yeah, a lot more tense and engaging in that respect than I was expecting. And yeah, so yeah, it was cool. It was a fun monstery kind of a thing, you know, better than Walking In, which you'd expect it to be. So this is cool. So yeah, I'll say 7. I'll say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Fuck that bomber when it's in the water, the wings in the water. I mean, maybe that was just done on a soundstage. Maybe that was done somewhere. I don't know. But the way that they picked up the water just above the thing as he's walking on there like that's cool. Like that's just really neat. It's like, just great job. So yeah, that wing water technique out of 10.
Excellent. Well, we'll take a little break and then we'll be back with the things we'll watch next time.
Yeah.
So next time we are going to watch some movies like we do. We're going to watch It's What's Inside that just dropped on Netflix for some reason, but that looks massively entertaining. We're going to check out VHS Halloween because, of course, we gotta. There are only two of those that we didn't watch for the show. Yeah, I have to pick them up at some point. But VHS Halloween, that's on Shudder. And then Good Boy, we're going to watch in the movie theater where they show films. So It's What's Inside, VHS Halloween, Good Boy. I've been Josh this entire time, and I will bid you a fondue.
We will have a short for the next episode, a short that I just had to wing it and try to find while Josh was talking, because I had picked one that I was all excited and thought I should double check just in case we've done it before. I don't think so. Surely I would remember. And my memory said, don't call me Shirley. and
like
you have
that
done,
shit I remember.
Yeah, right. And you have done that one before. So then I went, oh no. And so I have not watched this. This is on a list of things that I have to check out. So we're all going to find out together about The Horribly Slow Murderer with the Extremely Inefficient Weapon.
Oh, we have also watched that one, sir.
Are you shitting me?
No, we did that for one of the film festivals. It's a guy with a spoon.
Yep, it is.
God, oh, God, yes.
Damn it.
Oh, my God. All you have to see is a guy with a spoon, Josh. That's like, yes. Oh, yep. All right.
All right, what else do I have on my goddamn list? Nothing.
So we'll have
good.
A short, but we'll just put it on the show notes.
It'll yeah, let's fine. Do that. And then maybe I'll even have a time to watch it, and at least I'll like it. So, yeah. Blame all those years of clean living for my memory.
I mean, all three of okay, Matt, you can't take that mental all by yourself, because all three of us use external means outside of our skulls to remember what we have seen, not
this is
seen,
true.
And whether or not we have liked it. So we all do this true. Now. So yeah, that's not just your crust to bear.
I'm dying. Okay. Also, yeah, as far as you all know, I have been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn in Austin. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other. And I know I've mentioned it many times before, but now all the episodes are out. So if you want to go check out check out Revival from our friends at Paper Street, all those episodes are out through Sci-Fi. I think it's on AMC and multiple other places, but very cool adaptation. If you like the comic, you'll be into what they did. They did a very, very good job. Pardon me. Yeah, really cool deal. I really, really, really dug it. And then also the Mike Mignola documentary is now just on.
Oh,
Prime.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've not seen that, definitely go give that a go. It'll get you a little teary at a couple parts. It's excellent. And so that's available for you too. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and then we'll talk towards you before. I can't even talk anymore, so I didn't talk in any direction. But be good, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it was really nicely put together. Especially after watching the witch board, which...
Oh, yeah. What happened with that? Why did you do that?
Well, I thought that it was going to be Chuck Russell doing like a fun throwback to an 80s thing and like taking something that was not that great but fun to watch and making it even better, like either super scary or just hell's a popping crazy full of cool practical effects and stuff. And it was just not those things. It was just the Asylum level kind of thing. So now Dario Argento and Neil Marshall and him have all made movies that have scenes in the 1600s that are lit by just like Klieg lights in every scene. It's like they mixed up the lighting deliveries for Rounding and this one.
Well, didn't that happen in Coppola's one and was it Twixt? Wasn't there things in that one too where it
was
sort of like
that was the one that was like shot half in infrared though, wasn't it?
Just, yeah, there's like a couple
the pink
parts
trees
like,
and shit. Like, yeah,
my eyes hurt.
Like why, guy? Yeah, so it had no redeeming qualities at all. It took itself just serious enough not to be any fun. And not seriously enough to be any good.
Ah, that's a hell of a balance.
Yeah, well, there's something to be said. Like, movies keep getting gorier. Like, your average movie is gorier, but it's all like CGI blood splatter. So it's just kind of like a shrug. This one had, like, every time somebody got stabbed or shot or something, just rivers of blood would pour from them. Like they were anime characters with pressurized veins.
Right? Like, nice.
But not in a fun way. Again, it's like in a like kind of haphazard CGI blood spray kind of way.